Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hello and welcome to The Eurotrip, the world's favourite Eurovision podcast. Now, before we get on with today's episode, as you know by now, I am, of course, very excited to tell you that we are sponsored by the brand new Eurovision exhibition based in the Icelandic town of Húsavík.
That's right. The town itself found fame in the story of Fire Saga, the Eurovision film that was released on Netflix last year. And since then, fans from all over the globe have wanted to travel to Iceland to see the setting for that smash hit film.
Now, of course, we all know Iceland is such a beautiful country. And if the stunning scenery isn't enough to make you want to travel there, then the Eurovision exhibition, of course, has just opened in Húsavík on the north coast of Iceland. Maybe you can see some whales while you're there. The exhibition showcases the history of the Eurovision Song Contest, Iceland's participation, and there are some very memorable props and memorabilia from the Fire Saga film itself as well.
So to find out some more and to see some exclusive behind-the-scenes pictures of the official opening from a few weeks ago, be sure to go and check them out on Twitter. They are at Eurohusovic. But now, let's get on with the podcast.
As Jon Olason always said, take it away.
Hi, we are Davi Okakamagnev, and you're listening to Eurotrip.
But I don't close any doors. I love Eurovision, I love Melodifestivalen, and it will always be a part of me.
That night, I found myself live on Russian state television for Russia's Song for Europe.
I said to Joe, send BBC Teenage Life. Maybe 2 weeks later, I was at a press conference and I was on Making Your Mind Up.
Everyone was like, Eldar, come, celebrate with us.
The end of filming, they put honey on my face and I needed to be, you know, sexy with this honey on my face.
Hi there, my name is Martin Österdahl. I am the executive supervisor of the Eurovision Song Contest. You are listening to Eurotrip.
Hello and welcome to The Eurotrip, the world's favourite Eurovision podcast with me, Rob.
Me, James.
And this week, yet another Eurovision winner joins us on the podcast. It's always so good when we can bring you a winner. And today, it is the winner of Eurovision 1993. So technically, my first ever Eurovision winner, because 4 months before the contest, I was born. I told her that during the interview, needless to say. Didn't enjoy it that much. Didn't enjoy being reminded that I was, well, what, 4 months old when she won Eurovision.
Do you want to tell everybody who it actually is? Because you've not said it yet.
Yes, Niamh Kavanagh, everybody!
Well, hey, there you go.
We have got so much to hear from her, including this. which is when she told me how she had to get the day off from her job at the bank to compete in the Irish National Final.
I came into my head of department on the Friday morning, and I was supposed to be on a split shift, which is kind of a short shift on a Monday. And I said, look, I'm doing this thing on Sunday night, this TV thing. Is there any chance I could have Monday off? Because it could be late and, you know, whatever. So just, is that okay? And he said, oh, yeah, no problem, because actually we have enough staff. So you're only supposed to cover break, so we'll be able to work that out. I said, oh, that's great. That's great. So I went off, did the national final, obviously won it, and became Ireland's representative in the Eurovision. And the next day, mayhem broke out in the bank.
Oh, what a treat it is to have Niamh Kavanagh here on the Eurotrip. Winning act number 5, I think it is, here on the podcast. What a treat it always is to bring the winners to you. But not only that, we are also joined by Luis Mesa, a Spanish journalist who will be getting us up to date on all things Benidorm Fest in Spain and a little chat about Junior Eurovision as well.
There is so much to come. Also, we'll fit in a little bit of calendar watch as well.
You're listening on Acast, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. This is the Eurotrip.
James, I'm so pleased that you reminded me that I hadn't told everybody who the winner was that was joining us on this week's episode. Yeah, Niamh Kavanagh. I mean, we can't big that up enough. One of the best Eurovision winners ever. I'm not just saying that because she's on the podcast this week. In Your Eyes, brilliant song.
And also, something I learned there, well, I didn't necessarily learn it, I kind of knew it already, but just certified to me exactly when you were born, because I always kind of forget how old you actually are, but now, 1993, I'll definitely remember that, for sure.
How young I actually am, is what you meant.
Well, I'm younger, so I don't know if you can get away with saying that.
So your first Eurovision winner was?
Well, would that is the year of my birth, or the one, the first one, because yours came
the first. The first Eurovision that you were alive for?
Mine was Katrina.
Big. It's been downhill ever since.
It has been, yeah. I wonder what a coincidence that is.
Now, a Eurovision winner in many people's eyes, and yes, production is a secret, everybody, we did pause the podcast there while we worked out how we were getting get ourselves from Katrina to San Marino. But a Eurovision winner in many people's eyes, Valentina Minetta joined us on the podcast last week, which was wonderful. So good. So, so good. The best part, actually, for me, was seeing what she looked like when you chatted to her, which you can see in the video that we put on our socials. Lovely leopard print hat for the duration of the interview.
Yeah, I was going to say, not many people could pull that off, really, could they? Oh, honestly. She looked great. She sounded great on the podcast as well. And also, I refer to her as the Queen of San Marino. And I'm not entirely sure if that's a phrase that most people call her. But on socials this week, everybody's been talking about Valentina and referred to her as the Queen of San Marino. Have I started something there?
I don't know. But as I said, I think, on the episode last week, Senate must be absolutely fuming about the whole thing. Is that why she's going all in on trying to host Eurovision in Italy now? She's just... sacking San Marino off. I appreciate that it is Italian, but yeah, she's realised that she's not actually the Queen of San Marino because Valentina is, and she's putting all her eggs in the Italian basket. Or what would you just, what's all your eggs in the Italian basket equivalent in Italy? What would you be putting in your basket? You can't put limoncello in a basket, can you?
I tell you what, I'll leave you to stew on this and I'll have a look at some of the tweets we've had over the last 7 days. Shall I do that?
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. No, you carry on. I'll get back to you.
Thanks, everyone, for getting in touch about last week's podcast with Valentina Minetta. Victoria, thanks for getting in touch. We are at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter. She said, Valentina on Eurotrip Podcast, I can't think about Eurovision all the time. Me, can't relate. Yes, absolutely. I'm amazed she doesn't think about Eurovision all the time, actually, given most of her previous life history is just at a contest, given she's been there 4 times. Jamie as well, thanks for getting in touch, saying if Malta ever hosts, Valentina has to represent San Marino, so we could have Monetta in Valletta.
Love it.
Very good, Jamie, very good. And also Tim, we gave Tim a shout out last week, but lovely to hear from you again, Tim. You're saying, always applaud James and Rob for their hard work and giving fans what they want. But he also said, I'm listening to the podcast at work and trying not to lose it while Rob and James talk about BLT sandwiches. Yeah, I kind of forgot we did that.
Yeah, I'm going to do my best not to refer to myself as the mayo on this week's episode, which is a little bit, I don't know, just leaves you feeling a little bit dirty, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was a mistake on your part. You can be another slice of bread if you want this week.
Well, I'm still trying to work out what I'm putting in my Italian basket, and limoncello's all I got. I've forgotten about all Italian foods at this stage. I don't know, a bag of penne? I don't know.
I tell you what, you've got another 45 minutes to come up with a better reference than that. And if we still haven't done it, then you listening can get in touch as well. We are at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, or hello@eurotrippodcast.com on the email.
Guarantee no other Eurovision podcast this week is asking you for the Italian equivalent of eggs in a basket, which is exactly what we're doing right now. It's not the weirdest thing we've asked you to get in touch about, though, because cast your minds back a couple of weeks, and you may remember me and James spent an awful lot of time on the podcast talking about Eurovision calendars, or specifically, which of the Eurovision class of 2021 we would like to see in calendar form. Now, I think Stuart got in touch and agreed with you that you'd like to see an Albina calendar, which I know is your personal preference.
Well, I think you actually put that on me. That's not the one I came up with personally, but anyway, we'll roll with it.
I think you agreed, though, didn't you? You didn't say otherwise.
Well, yeah, probably because I just wanted you to carry on with calendar watching, get it over and done with.
Well, bad news for you, sir, because 2 weeks later, we're still talking about it. I had a Google before the start of the episode to see whether the Albina calendar was available ahead of Christmas. Bad news. There is not an Albina calendar. However, I can offer you this Albina Gold Heart Design Planner, which, yeah, it's coming from America, so you've got to pay quite a lot of postage. It's basically just a black planner with a heart in the middle, with the name Albina on it. Interested?
I think I might give that a pass, actually, if I'm totally honest with you.
Not since that box of useless Eurovision memorabilia will there have been anything as useless in your bedroom. Although, that's not true. We'll leave that there. also, bad news, Hurricane, their calendar's not out yet either. However, our Eurovision winners, I say Måneskin, James says Måneskin.
No, I say Måneskin. You say Måneskin. I'm pretty sure it's Måneskin.
I'll say Måneskin.
Okay.
It makes me sound more cultured, even if I'm wrong. I enjoy a shh in the middle of a word. Yeah, their calendar is out. Good news. However, it will set you back about 17 quid if you're interested.
Oh, I don't know if I can spare the 17 quid. How does that compare to the Fizzers calendar? That's the big question on everybody's lips.
That is a big question. And I will find that out for you, sir, while we're doing this.
Well, you've had your 15 seconds, Rob. Please tell me the Fizz have a cheaper calendar than Måneskin.
Got some good news. It's £15.95.
Cool. Well, you're buying it for me anyway, so you've got a better deal. Carry on.
I'd love to, but some bad news. I have missed the deadline for pre-orders. But, you know, yeah, me and Cheryl Baker, good pals. So just slide into a DMs maybe and get my hands on one.
Looking forward to that. But I'm not as good as you at these segues, so I'll just say it's time for the news.
And I promise, listeners, I am significantly more prepared than James was last week. We will start with Junior Eurovision tickets, which went on sale today, or at least they should have done, because obviously not recording on Wednesday, but today is Wednesday, and hopefully they still went on sale anyway. If they did, I can tell you that in a scenario A or scenario B, that's right, Eurovision in a pandemic, we're back to scenarios, we know that there will be a maximum audience of 3,500 people to attend both the jury and the live shows by the organisers. Still waiting for the exact number, though, of course, and it will be subject to the number of infections at the time of the final. That's all the Junior Eurovision news this week, FYI. On to Eurovision, and Israel kicked off the 2022 Eurovision national selection season at the weekend. That's when the X Factor Israel held their first show. Former winner Netta is one of the five members of the jury on that programme, which will eventually see the four finalists battle it out for the golden ticket to Eurovision 2022. In Australia, SBS, the Australian national broadcaster, have revealed the first three acts taking part on the Gold Coast in Australia Decides next February. They are Paulini, Jaguar Jones and Isaiah Firebrace, who of course finished ninth for Australia at Eurovision 2017. Isaiah will sing a duet with an as yet unnamed artist. Dami Im, is it you? I was just going to leave the pause there so she can reply if she's listening. I doubt she is. In Montenegro, RTCG have opened their song submission period for artists and composers to submit their songs in a quest to represent Montenegro, what a wonderful country, which translates as Black Mountain. Do you know that? Anyway, the deadline, currently set for the 10th of December, the singer has to be a Montenegrin citizen, which rules me and James out, but the composer and producers can be foreigners. Good news, the songwriters can submit up to two songs for the selection. The submission window also is open in Croatia. The artists competing in Melody Grand Prix 2022 in Norway are to be revealed on January the 6th. And in Spain, they've announced that they have extended the song submission period for Benidorm Fest until the 10th of November due to the high number of submissions. They said they wanted to give artists and composers more time to work on their respective entries. Initially, that deadline was the 29th of October. But yeah, now 10th of November.
And breathe. Gosh, that was a lot of news, wasn't it? A lot of dates for the diary over the next coming weeks and months or so. Wow, it's getting busy again.
It is getting busy, isn't it? We've got our first quarterfinals in Esti Lau later in the month as well.
Oh gosh, how can you forget about that? Oh, it is getting busy, busy, busy. Just how we like to see it in the world of the Eurovision Song Contest. Lovely of you to mention Benidorm Fest at the end of that news update as well, Rob. Very convenient, because I thought it would be wise for us to have a little bit more of an in-depth chat about it. Not with me and Rob, but with Luis Mesa. He is a Spanish journalist. He's covering the Eurovision Song Contest, and he's also very, very hot on the world of the Junior Eurovision Song Contest as well. So we'll have a little bit of a chat with him about that very, very shortly. But first, I thought it would be best for us to start off by re-examining Spain's performance at this year's Eurovision Song Contest.
Well, I'm agree with you. I think Blas is an amazing singer with an amazing voice. And Voy a Quedarme is a good ballad with a great message about the loss of her grandma with the pandemic. That's a song with a lot of heart, but at the end, that's not a song to win Eurovision or to get a top 10 or top 15, I guess. So, yeah. I remember that I was thinking a lot during Eurovision about a top button, and finally it was only a button. So for us, was bad, but not at bad at all. But yeah, I think Blas has a lot of potential, and he could choose or select another type of song, and he could get a better result, but...
It's interesting, isn't it, when we look at Spain's results over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. They're a big five country, similar to the UK. And do you think it's this sort of inconsistent selection process where sometimes it's an internal selection, sometimes it's a national final, then sometimes it's a different national final, that is the reason why Spain and, I guess, the UK aren't getting these consistently good results?
Yeah, I'm truly sure that we are in the same boat, James. BBC and TVE are so similar in that time. But I think there are two countries with a great history. They are amazing TV. They are members of the Big Five. But they have a lot of years going Eurovision only to stay there, to pass the exam. And I think Eurovision is so difficult to win. You have to, it's similar to win the lottery. It's very difficult, but to have a great result, you have to do an amazing job with an amazing pack, thinking a lot during a long time. And I think BBC and TVE didn't do anything about that. But I think in Spain, something is changing. And I suppose in BBC too, with the GIP collaboration. And we hope the future could be better for us.
Let's hope so. Fingers crossed. Chatting about the future, of course, Spain's new direction for 2022 is Benidorm Fest, which sounds very, very exciting. Give us an idea about what this is going to look like.
Oh, first of all, let me show you a little bit of history. Benidorm Fest is the reborn of the Festival of Benidorm, which is a festival who stayed in Spain since 1959, 3 years after the beginning of Eurovision. They are siblings, and it was a very important contest in the authoritarian era. With Franco and so on. It's the beginning of the career of Rafael, of Julio Iglesias, for example. The first place they win something was in Benidorm. And nowadays, nobody knows a lot of about Benidorm, but I think it's a great opportunity for RTBE because they have an amazing colleague, the Comunidad Valenciana, who could help them to make something different and to try to do something like another Mediterranean San Remo, because Benidorm is one of the biggest tourism cities of Spain, and it could be really amazing. We are looking forward to the artists, to the songs, to the submissions process, but they are working so hard. There are a lot of great people who know Eurovision, who love Eurovision walking, and it's like completely different. Today is a different day like we were living a few years ago.
Now, a few days ago, it was meant to be the closing of the submissions window for the songs to be submitted. And it's been extended a little bit now, hasn't it? Is that a concern? Is that sort of RTV saying, oh, we haven't got enough entries here. This hasn't been as popular as we first thought it might be.
But it's possible. They have two submission methods. On the one hand, an open online call for whatever they want, and the other, a series of invitations to composers, singers, and record labels. I think the record labels are are basically the main entrance to Benidorm Fest. And they said that they need a little bit more of time to receive those songs of very important singers, they said. So we have a lot of hype, to be honest, but it's something normal in that world. For example, Festival Ikenges has a new place, or Melody Grand Prix 2. So it's something normal, but here we are in a very difficult situation because the Spanish Eurofan is a biggest fandom, but we didn't have any type of hope, never. So it's easy to get nervous. So we need to stay a little bit relaxed and to be confident with RTV this year.
You mentioned earlier about the history of Benidorm Fest and some of the big Spanish names that have come through this competition. With it being sort of reborn this year or for 2022, are we going to see some of Spain's biggest names, some of Spain's biggest artists, do you think?
Oh, we don't know. RTV claims for a little bit of confidentiality. So they are working without saying a lot of, but I think there's a lot of young talents sending songs to RTBE, and that's fully great. But I think it's your first year. They signed for 3 years in a row for Benidorm Fest. So you need to have an amazing mixture between great song of a great artist and then young people, young talents too. And it's a little bit difficult. So I think it could be a great artist, but I think it's time to have people who wants to come to Eurovision, because Spanish artists have frightened about Eurovision. And to be honest, it's normal because the results aren't good. The people suffer a lot with Eurovision too. So I don't know. RTV are working, they have their cards, and we're looking forward to see it.
One other thing we're looking forward to as well, of course, is Junior Eurovision. We can now say it's next month. That's very exciting. It's coming up very, very soon. Remind us of the artist and the song that Spain is sending this year.
Oh, they choose Levy, was the last winner of the Voice Kids here. That's like the same that they are sending all the countries, like Poland has the same, Portugal has the same. And their song is Reir, a song of David Roma, is one of the main composers of Sony music here in Spain. And it's great. I think Spain could be the Sweden of the Junior Eurovision. They always send good music, good concept, always with child proposals, you know, because it's difficult to say Junior Eurovision like a competition. You know, we need a festival for kids to have fun in Christmas in Paris. It's great. But I think it's a great song. Right? It's a great song. But I think RTV has less possibility of winning like 2 years ago with Marte or last year with Palante, I suppose.
Well, not long until we find out, only a few weeks about six or seven weeks to go until Junior Eurovision comes round. I'm sure you'll have your fingers crossed for a good result for Spain. And of course, then we can look forward to Eurovision as well next year. And hopefully some more exciting results for Spain to come. And no doubt we'll chat to you more on the podcast between now and then. Luis, thank you so much for joining us for a chat.
Thank you, James.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on social media. We're at Eurotrip Podcast.
A big thanks to Luis Messer for joining us here on the Eurotrip this week. No doubt that won't be the only time between now and May next year when he'll be joining us to chat all things Spain at the contest. Don't forget, we've still got Niamh Kavanagh to come. But for now, let's just remind you that we are this week sponsored by the brand new Eurovision exhibition based in Húsavík in Iceland.
A really good write-up, actually, on the new Eurovision exhibition on the official Eurovision website, which went on there a few days ago. So Eurovision.tv, if you want to go and have a look at that. But the exciting thing, of course, now is the exhibition is open. Icelandic Eurovision star Greta Salome did the honours a few weeks ago. The doors are open now if you want to check out all their incredible rooms decorated with all things Iceland at Eurovision. There's that brilliant room as well, full of props from the Netflix Fire Saga movie as well.
Yeah, and to get us in the mood for hopefully travelling to Iceland very, very soon, we thought we'd bring you an Icelandic word every single week to sort of get you up to speed on the language you'll need to know if you decide to head over there. And Rob, it's your turn this week, so what have you got?
Already regretting this word because it is very, very long. I can't even begin to count the number of syllables in this word. Oh, God, drumroll, please. This week's word is Stefnumaktakvold.
Oh, gosh, that is a mouthful, isn't it? Sorry, I think you broke up as well. Can you say it again?
Yeah, that's convenient, isn't it? Stefnumaktakvold.
Wow, oh, that second time, it just sounds so clear. Oh, yeah, I'm...
Stefnumaktakvold.
Very good, very good.
I'm going to wake up in cold sweat saying Stefnumaktakvold at this point.
I'm looking forward to find out how you actually pronounce that. Let's think, I've tried to be helpful with some of my words, so we've done like airport and taxi and things like that. I think you've maybe gone a little bit off-piste, and I'm going to say this... Actually, is this a word, because I know there's a lot of them over there, is this a word for volcano?
Oh, that'd be good, wouldn't it? No, it's not. It's not actually that useful. It's just something that I would hope that me and you could do together when we're there.
Share a romantic walk.
Almost.
Ah.
Not far. Stefnumaktakvold is the Icelandic for date night.
Ah, very good. Very good. That will be useful for a lot of people travelling there, then, won't it?
Although... Actually, thinking about it, if I want to invite you on a date night, you are famously also English, so I could have just said date night.
Yeah, well, there you go. So if you're planning to go there and meet an Icelandic person and take them on a date, we've got you covered right here. Say it once more, Rob.
Stefnumaktakvold.
Yeah, very useful if you want to go and make the trip over there to Iceland to, of course, see the new museum.
Yeah, if you go on a date, thanks to me telling you that word, maybe you can take them to the museum. Maybe that can be date number two. Who knows? The exhibition, of course, don't forget, they want your submissions as well for that really exciting Eurovision room that is coming together at the moment. They want your photos, maybe of your favourite Eurovision memory, a trip to the contest, meeting an act. You can send them to eurovision@husavik.com. That's eurovision@husavik.com. And for more info and pictures showing you what to expect, make sure you follow them on Twitter as well, of course. They are at Eurohusavik. But for now, it's back to the podcast.
This is the Eurotrip.
When you aren't listening, you can find us on social media.
We're at Eurotrip Podcast.
Warming you up for the Eurovision Song Contest.
That's right, you are listening to the Eurotrip. What a pleasure, as always, it is to have you along for the ride this week. And if you're listening, if you've not got a lot to do right now, if you're just sort of chilling or if you're on the bus or something like that, do get in touch with us. We are at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. hello@eurotrippodcast.com on the emails. And if you're feeling adventurous, why not drop us a review? Why don't you rate us 5 stars? Wherever you listen to the podcast this week.
Before we get to Niamh Kavanagh, which is on the way in a second, I want to admit something. A little bit of a confessional. I was listening to another Eurovision podcast at the weekend.
Were you now?
I I think you'll understand, because it's a good one and we like them. We're friends of the podcast, I would say.
I'm going to take a risk here. Let's hope I'm right, otherwise it's going to look awkward. Hope it was Aussie Vision.
It was. It was. I just wanted to shout out Aussie Vision because they're back, which is nice. They've been away. They've had their off season, as we did, and they returned with their first episode of the 2022 season at the weekend, and it was very enjoyable. Just nice to hear Mike and Dale back on, you know? I thought that maybe Mike and Dale would say similar about us. They didn't, but you know, I don't mind. We'll be the bigger people.
Yeah, they've got time as well. They've got a lot of episodes to do between now and May. I'm sure they'll save it for the right time. And also, we had some Australian Eurovision news last week as well, so it might be high time we invite them back on for another chat. That would be good, wouldn't it?
I think Mike and Dale will be back on this podcast very, very soon. I say that as if we're not in control of it. I mean, it's only me and you that are responsible, isn't it? So, I mean, let's just get them back on, shall we? Let's do it.
Let's do it. Let's make it happen before the end of the month. Well, actually, I've sort of committed to that now. I suppose we can do that, can't we?
I reckon so. So, but yeah, I mean, is that what we're going to do now? We just, anything we say on the podcast has to happen.
Has to happen.
Let's get the UK's winner of Eurovision on in May next year.
Oh, what? That's a good idea. Here's another one for you. Let's get the winner of Eurovision 1993 on the podcast right now.
Hey, very good. Let's do that. Is that just your way of hurrying me along because you're hungry and you know that you're having your dinner after this?
Yeah, the pasta's ready in 10 or 15 minutes, so you better hurry this up.
Well, you're right. You're not wrong. Niamh Kavanagh is on the podcast this week, and it is time to hear my chat with her, which, I'll be honest with you, is a bit longer than some of the ones that you have heard in recent weeks, purely because it's just such a lovely listen. So I hope you will indulge me. Niamh, of course, won Eurovision 1993 for Ireland with her song In Your Eyes, which is a wonderful song. Go and check it out on YouTube. Go and have a watch of it because it's so beautiful. Such a good song. And of course, that year was a very, very tense finish with Ireland just beating the United Kingdom, which you will hear a bit of shortly. Now, Niamh, of course, is a very memorable Eurovision winner because she came back. She did Eurovision again in 2010. So we will talk about that. And we will talk about how her role in the hit film The Commitments, if you haven't heard of it, ask your mum or dad. I'll get Niamh to explain a little bit later on how her role in that film got her on the Eurovision stage in the first place. But I started by asking her how she looks back on Eurovision now, 28 years after winning the contest.
I often refer to Eurovision as your favourite auntie. You love to visit her, but occasionally you'll visit and you'll find her with her pants on her head. You know, that's kind of what it's like. You know, you just don't know what you're going to get when you get in there. And it can be quite bizarre at times, but actually there's nothing but love in it.
If we go back to the very beginning, the very start. Mm-hmm. Now, Niamh, yeah. Were you always destined for a career in music, do you think? Because your father was a musician, wasn't he?
Yeah, my father was a saxophonist and sang. But like anybody in the real world back in those days, it wasn't a real job, shall we say. And so therefore, he also had a job. So he gigged, you know, 7 nights a week and worked during the day, which is what I pretty much did for the first 7 years of my life in the industry. And people used to say that you weren't a real musician if you did that. But anyway, I think from the time I was born, although for the first 2 weeks, my mother says, you know, my mother often says that I came out singing from the womb. But the truth is I had a stridor, which meant my vocal cords weren't developed when I was born. So for about 2 weeks, I made no sound, which was the last time anybody had blissful silence from me, I think. But basically, I can't remember a time when I haven't sung. I mean, that has always been part of who I am, such an integral part. I always loved it when I was young. I was always making up wee songs and singing in that high-pitched way young girls do, you know, like la 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 and all that, probably driving everybody demented, joining into anybody who would let me sing, any gig, any concert, any competition, anywhere I could sing, I went and found it. And some of it is to do with who I am as a person and how much I loved to sing, but also some of it is the fact that I have two older sisters who are already better than me at everything else. So it seemed to me that's what I could do better than anybody else. So that's what I'll do. And so there's an element to that. But actually also growing up in my house, there was a lot of music all the time. So although my father made music, my mother listened to music. And actually, if I want to record anything, I run it across my mum first, because she is a great listener.
You mentioned that, like your father, you know, the first 7 years of your career in the industry, you were also doing other jobs as well, doing other work. What were you combining with, you know, gigging in the evening? What were you up to?
Well, I lived a very varied career originally. I came out of school not wanting to go to uni, but I went anyway because I was too young when I left school. I was only 17. And it's impossible to get a reasonable job when you're 17. You get paid less and everything. It's all a bit nasty. So I went back to uni because they paid me £12 a week to do that. So I trained as a hotel receptionist, which I thought would be a nice jammy thing to do. It was pretty hard course, actually. There was law and accountancy and everything involved in it, because back then you had to do everything. There was no computer to do it for you. And but I loved it, and I was never going to work in hotels, but I just enjoyed the fact that I got to do something different for a year. But the whole time I was gigging. So I started about the age of 17 and a half, 18. Really, 18 is when I really kind of got in the band. And basically, I worked 6 nights a week and a Sunday afternoon doing weddings, bar mitzvahs, and a cred gig on a Sunday afternoon in the local pub, where we did all the hits of the day, shall we say. And then during the day, originally I worked in Aer Lingus. I worked in check-in in Aer Lingus. I worked in the airport authority. I worked on the information desk. I was the voice that said, "May I have your attention, please?" So I did all that. And always working with the microphone. And then I worked in Cleary's, which is a big department store, worked in the cash office there. I basically worked wherever I could. And eventually I got a temporary contract in AIB, which was a bank. But I worked in the departments. I didn't work actually in a branch. I never actually worked in branches, but I worked in departments. So I moved in and out of there a couple of times over the years. And then I was made permanent about 6 months. Not even 3 months before I did the commitments. And I took the job because I thought I might as well, because obviously singing isn't a real job. And my mother was very happy for me to keep my good job, even after I was on this multi-million selling soundtrack album and sang on the Grammys. Like, I literally took my split week in the bank one time and went over to New York and sang on the Grammys and came back in time to do my next shift. And, you know, that it's a bizarre kind of way to be, but actually it really taught me, that whole section taught me to be myself 100% and understand the value of, shall we say, fleeting fame.
Niamh, I want to go very quickly back to what you said before, which is, because I want to ask you about the commitments as well, of course,
because our listeners,
they may not know about the commitment, so I want you to inform them and tell them all about it. But before we get to that, you mentioned that you went to the Grammys and then came back and managed to do your shift afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
What was the staff room like after you'd been at the Grammys? I mean, you don't get that very often.
Do you know what, actually, this is going to sound weird, because it happened the same time after I won the National Song Contest, right? I'm going to tell you a story because it's relative to the same thing. They were always aware that I gigged. Right. In every job I did, it was nearly impossible to hide it. And it put extra pressure on me in the job itself, because obviously you could never ring in sick. You could never be late, because they would blame it on the gig. And lots of people would be coming in completely dying, lying under their tables, but, you know, or they'd be off for mild colds. But I could never be sick, never be out. And I never was in all the time I was there. But what used to happen was I would come in to work after, say, a split shift. I'd been off a few days, and they kind of got so used to me gigging, they didn't really pay attention to what it was I actually did. And surprisingly, quite a few of them wouldn't have necessarily been at the gig itself. But anyway, the thing is, when I did the Grammys, I came back in on the Wednesday night. I flew back in because it's on a Sunday night. So by the time I flew back, my next shift was the Wednesday evening, and I went in and they said to me, "So what did you do on your week off?" I said, "Well," and I told them, and they're like looking at me going, and I don't think they really hear it, right? They don't really hear it. They're very blasé about it and stuff. So like, it was fine. Yes, of course, they thought it was surprising, but they didn't, because I was still in doing my job, I don't think they really thought about it. So coming up to the national final, of the Eurovision, the Eurosong in Ireland, I I came into my head of department on the Friday morning, and I was supposed to be on a split shift, which is kind of a short shift on a Monday. And I said, look, I'm doing this thing on Sunday night, this TV thing. Is there any chance I could have Monday off? Because it could be late and, you know, whatever. So just, is that okay? And he said, oh, yeah, no problem, because actually we have enough staff. So you're only supposed to cover breaks, so we'll be able to work that out. I said, oh, that's great. That's great. So I went off, did the national final, obviously won it, and became Ireland's representative in the Eurovision. And the next day, mayhem broke out in the bank, because normally when they know somebody's representing the country in something, or there's a big sporting person in the bank, which is quite regular for the GAA and all that sort of stuff, they absolutely, you know, they advertise it to the hilt that this person works for them. And they all over the papers on the Monday was this AIB banker basically won the national song that's going to represent us. And there was chaos and nobody knew what was happening, because really up until then, nobody really saw me on TV, although I did do TV, but they didn't see me and they didn't know me as a person, as in Niamh Kavanagh, even though I'd done The Commitments, which was an enormous success all over the world. But actually, the physicality of it then became a thing. And I was on a lot of interviews, a lot of things. So I actually technically still work for the bank right up until about, I took a career break after I won the Eurovision, right? I did all my shifts right up to 2 weeks before the Eurovision.
Now, before we got to the national final, you winning the national final, you going on to represent Ireland, you, of course, as you've already mentioned, you were at the Grammys. And the reason you were at the Grammys, I can only assume, was because of The Commitment.
Now, I automatically assume people are going to know what The Commitments are, right? But to be fair, we're now sufficiently past it that, you know, there are people who don't know what The Commitments are. So The Commitments was a movie, well, actually it's a book written by Roddy Doyle, who's an amazing writer and really funny, really funny. It's a small book, it's hilarious. It's basically about a bunch of young ones and young fellas, as they say, from Dublin, who decide to make a soul band. And they decide to do this, and it's all about them becoming a band and not, and all that, and what happens. And Alan Parker, who was an exceptional filmmaker, decided to come in and make a movie in Dublin. Now, the world, when I say the world, the whole of Ireland, if you had even a tin whistle in your pocket, you auditioned for it, right? Everybody auditioned. And Alan Parker rang me and he said, look, you're not right for the part, Niamh. You know, I think we can all agree with that. I said, no, you're right. He says, I can't make you what you need to be for this. I said, that's okay. And he says, but I'd really love you to come and sing on the album. So I sang three tracks on the album. And so I went in September 1990, I'll never forget it, went in and recorded three songs, Destination Anywhere, Nowhere to Run, and Do Right Woman, Do Right Man. Took my 290 punts, which were my session fee, and went off to EOS and had 2 weeks of, obviously, I'm going to say debaucherous fun, but it wasn't, it was just myself and my friends just went and had a great holiday on EOS in Greece. We had a wonderful time, and I didn't think another thing about it until the following year when it came out, and it was hugely successful. And so the following year was when I got selected for Eurovision, because Jimmy Walsh had heard me on The Commitments, and he figured my voice was the right voice for what he needed. I remember Jimmy Walsh saying to me when I was kind of humming and hawing about Eurovision, so I'm not sure Eurovision is where I should be going, because I'm doing really well and doing this, and that, you know, they're not necessarily, that's not on their radar there. And he said, you know, Niamh, you can make Eurovision anything you want to. You don't have to be what you think people say you have to be, because there is this kind of, they like to put you in little boxes, as we know, in life, but in particular in Eurovision, this, every interview I ever did with the Eurovision, unless it was a fan doing it, was that they started it with, what do you think about the kiss of death that the Eurovision is for your career? And I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, you know, I won't accept that, because I don't think that's true. I think it's only true, you know, because for a moment you are globally aware and people, you know, are very focused on what you do. But the thing is, what you do after that is entirely up to you. It's not, you don't have to let that define you. There will always be moments where you're more famous than others, unless you're like Beyonce, who like bats an eyebrow and it happens, you know what I mean? So, but she works hard for it. I don't mean that, but you know what I'm saying? Very few people live at that level of fame all the time. And there's a lot of people who are very successful in this industry without ever even been known beyond where they work, you know. So you just have to stop letting other people try to define that for you.
Skepticism exists even at the time that you did Eurovision. So, of course, at the time that you do Eurovision, Ireland have just won it the year before. You know, Johnny Logan had won it a couple of times in the recent past at that point as well. So, Did that skepticism even exist then?
We talk about the golden age of 90s in particular and Eurovision. Oh, you were all amazing and how wonderful what we all thought Eurovision was then. And we really didn't. People didn't. People didn't rate it as a thing. Don't get me wrong. They loved it and everybody watched it, but they didn't rate it as a place that you would be able to move from. Even back then, especially in the UK, no offense, but every time I went into the UK, straight into a, you know, you do a tour of the radio stations afterwards and you can see it on their faces, like, wheel them in. What are we doing here? And they start with that whole deriding the Eurovision thing. And I was like, hold on here a second, right? I've just sung in front of 350 million people. When you've done that and you've achieved something that you, because, you know, I went, I sang, I performed well, people responded well to it. If only 1% of people respond to that, that's still 3 million more people that are probably listening to you. So what the hell are you making this judgment for? You know, I don't understand why people have a real concept. Yes, I get it's kitsch at times, but I don't see why people are not grabbing the chance to be on a platform that is so global. And I mean, it's completely global. It's not just Europe. It's all over the world. You said the Americans contact me, Australians, all these, you know, we have people from all over the world watching it. If you can own that for 3 minutes, that's more exposure than most people get sometimes their whole career.
The only difference, I think, with the show that you won, of course, in 93 is, of course, the venue that it took place in, which I was fascinated to ask you about because, you know, growing up as a Eurovision fan, I've always known Eurovision to be in these massive arenas, absolutely huge things, these massive, you know, stadiums.
We were in the smallest one. Yeah, the smallest one in the modern times. Obviously, they would have done it in theatres when it started out, like it was held in the Gaiety Theatre one night year, I think, and the Gaiety would have been tiny, like. But actually, they only had about 3,000 people at our Eurovision because by the time they put in the big stage and all the backstage area, and quite a lot of the dressing rooms were all in marquees at the back, which, you know, that's the level of amazement that we were at.
Because it was an equestrian centre, right?
It was. It was a real stroke of genius by Noel C. Duggan. He just said, "Why? I'll give you the venue for free." Now, it cost him a fortune to hold it there because they had to put the infrastructure in. And he got all of the roads done around and the railway station was... He absolutely future-proofed his town by doing it. And fair play to him. But actually, what it did to Eurovision, and you were only born, so I take it you didn't actually physically come. But basically, anybody who was at the Eurovision in 93 will tell you that you can see it by them if they have been, because they're feeling about it is different to nearly every other Eurovision you've been. Now, let's be honest, the first time you go to Eurovision is always the best one, right? No matter what, where it is, because obviously your first real experience of being actually in the bubble, as we call it, is always the best. But the thing about the one in 1993 is it wasn't in a city. It was basically in a town of about 1,500 people. There was less people living in that town that ended up at the gig, right? And actually, people felt like they really lived Eurovision completely for a year and for that whole week, because it was only a week then. So, you know, if you went to that Eurovision, you were a part of something that was very separate. When it goes into cities, as wonderful as it is, that it's also absorbed by the city and the city is still existing and all the other stuff is still going on. Nothing else was going on except Eurovision, which was hilarious. And also put into the fact that it was also a small town. So it was a small town situation and we were staying. We used to have to get buses over from Killarney because there wasn't enough places for us to stay. So you'd come over, it was a 40-minute journey, and then you went to the city. It was a very different energy. And in a way, it felt like everybody's win then, rather than just mine and Jimmy's, if you understand. It felt like everybody won it that year.
What was it like being the pinnacle of that, I suppose? Because being the Irish representative after an Irish win at a contest held in Ireland in a town where Eurovision is literally the only show in town.
Yeah.
Must have just been ridiculous.
It was hard to keep. I'm not going to say it was hard to keep me down on the farm after that. Like I was. Yeah. No, but it meant you had to do everything. You know, you had to be at everything and do everything. And anyone who's been to Eurovision as a representative or even as a fan will know that there's an enormous amount of work that goes around just those 3 minutes you stand on stage. It's not just that. You've got a lot of press. You've got a lot of meet and greets. You've got a lot of rehearsal. You've got a lot of stuff. There's a huge amount of work that goes on around that. It's not just those 3 minutes that you stand on the stage. And so it was added to for me, not just as a representative, although we took the attitude that we were going down like every other representative, which is not actually true, because obviously, you know, the locals knew me and they were invested in me already. And so it, being the local representative is actually hilariously fun and wonderful, because there's nothing but love in the room for you, you know, so you're flying and there's no pressure, because at that point we weren't into consecutive wins. I was the first consecutive win. And little did we know that we were about to have another one after. And, you know, and so forever, no matter, even if Sweden catches us up, the three of us will be forever a unit, because we have won three in a row, which is, I think, will be nearly impossible for people to replicate now.
Of course, what people may forget when they kind of look back in the history books, of course, you know, they look back at you guys as three consecutive winners. But it could have been so different, because I think on the night in 1993, it came down to the very last set of scores.
Oh, yeah. Listen, don't even start me. That was the most excruciating experience I've ever had in my life. And I've had two children.
Luxembourg.
Luxembourg.
Luxembourg. 10 points. Luxembourg. D. Juan.
Okay, okay.
And finally, Ireland.
It could have gone to us. It could have gone to the UK. It went to Ireland.
If Malta had voted in order, we would have won a bit earlier on in the show. So I'm slightly suspicious they weren't able to get through to Malta. I could understand why they might not be able to get to Grosny. I think they created a bit of television gold. Speaking as the person that's the centre of it, I could have done without it. Having said that, it is pretty phenomenal and people still talk about it. It was probably one of the closest votes ever.
17 years between you winning Eurovision and then you returning to the Eurovision stage. I don't want to ask the question, what were you up to in those 17 years? Because I feel like that's another potentially long story. But what got you back into Eurovision in the first place?
Well, you never say never. I don't know that I ever really thought I'd go back in, but I remember having conversations with Niall Mooney, one of the writers. That people often ask me, would I go back? And I go, well, I cannot say I'll never go back. I don't see really why I should go back. But, you know, I could think about it. But Niall warned me down. But he sent me a song that I liked. And you know, I used to say to people, just send me songs. I'll have a listen, you know. I'm as proud of 2010 as I was of 93, and I know that sounds weird because obviously I didn't win it, but I did qualify, which is unusual these days. And considering to a lot of people watching the Eurovision, because the demographic is quite young as well, which is really lovely, to actually rate on people's radar enough to qualify now is quite an achievement in itself. And you know, I'm well aware I was some old doll standing on a bit of wood singing a song that wouldn't be necessarily their kind of song. You know, but the point is, it brought me into a whole new group of people. And what I really loved about it was, I had to think about what I would feel about it. And because I loved the song, I thought, you know what, actually, I could go and do this. And at this point, I'd been asked for 17 years, what do we have to do to win it again? Well, maybe not 17, because obviously we won ridiculous amount and people weren't asking the question for a while. But, you know, it felt like 10 years of, you know, what do we have to do to do well? And the truth is, I said, you just got to go sing a song and really believe in it. And send what you love. So I put my money where my mouth was, and I went and I sung a song, and I feel I achieved what I needed to do, which was basically get up and do something that I believed in, and people responded very well to it. And you know, where it mattered, I did very well. And that's, you know, if you're not the winner, it doesn't matter where you come after that. No, it really doesn't.
Let the light of my love shine.
You know, and actually, even if you're not, even if you are the one, it doesn't make any difference. At the end of the day, you still have to do the same thing. It's just, you know. So actually, I found it just as successful for me the second time, weirdly. Maybe not as all-consuming, which is probably just as well because I had two small kids at home. But I hummed and hawed about it. I wondered, was it something I wanted to do? Not because I was afraid to put myself out and be thrown out at any stage, because I would have gone out at the national final if it wasn't the right thing. I would have accepted that. That's okay. And actually, for once, I got to go away. I went to Oslo, which was amazing. And, you know, so a very different energy. So I did think long and hard about why I should do it, but I'm really glad I did, you know, because it was a very, it was a different experience in the same thing. And actually, I would seriously consider going back as a writer now or as a delegate, because quite frankly, I would have the lulls with the fans. I'd love to be here. Every time I go, I don't really have, You can't really go and party with everybody, because obviously you've got to get up and sing, and usually, you know, they don't give me easy songs to sing. So I would like to go back in a way that I could actually spend time with the fans doing it and really experience it from that end of things. Obviously with a laminate, because everybody wants the laminate, but you know.
Guess what that's saying, with zone one or whatever it is on there, which means you can go everywhere. Yeah.
I don't want to just go to Eurovision, let's be honest. Like, I want to be a part, I want to be doing something special. And actually, 2010, I went back as a previous winner, which has its own energy in it. And what's really lovely is it did introduce me to a whole new group of fans who probably weren't as aware of me from the previous one, although they would be aware of it. But you know what I'm talking about? That kind of put me more in their space of being part of their Eurovision experience, which was really lovely.
What's so wonderful, Niamh, is it's clear how much you love Eurovision, how much you love the contest. It must have been so wonderful to see how the contest has even grown, not even just in the last year, but since Måneskin won it in 2021, earlier this year. You know, we've seen what they've done for brand Eurovision, as it were. It would be lovely if Ireland were to become a part of that, wouldn't it? To get back on the bus and go along for the ride.
I think Ireland never got off the bus. They're just down the back. You know what I mean? They're trying to follow it instead of lead it. And that's not entirely true, because I do know that the selection process and the people involved in it are always trying to find new ways. And I think in a way, they tried very hard with Leslie this year to think about the staging, do something really inventive. Now, it didn't quite hit the mark. Maybe you might have arguments about that. But the truth is, they are more innovative than you think. They try very hard to move forward. The difficulty is, when you're chasing what might work, you're forgetting about who you are. And actually, when we do what we do, whatever that is, and it doesn't have to be what we did in the 90s, right? Let's be honest here. You know, when you have something that just hits the zeitgeist, that moment of whatever it is, you know, you can't make a decision what that's going to be. I mean, you know yourself, when something wins one year, the following year, there's quite a few songs that are similar to it come up as if that's the thing that's going to win it. But it isn't. That's not the way it works. I think that we forget that the whole of Europe, a lot of the people who vote are not the fans. You know, a lot of people who vote are people who are maybe seeing things literally for those 3 minutes, or they've watched 500. You know, I knew Israel was going to win the year they won, because my son came in and said, oh, they're winning because they're. And I said, why do you say that? And he said, because they've got five times as many hits as anybody else on YouTube. And which he was right. There was millions of people watched her video on YouTube. It hit the zeitgeist, and they were watching. They went, oh, that's familiar. I know what that is. So I'm going to vote for that. And, you know, so you don't know what that is. So why chase it? Why not just define what you think it is? People tell them all the time, mainly the media, tell them that that has no value, but it's not true. It is. It's absolutely not true. They try to make it true, but it is absolutely not true. And I think then there's a lack of respect for what they could be doing. And it comes across a little bit sometimes. It just feels a little bit slipshod. And so why should the rest of Europe go, okay, we're going to reward that? You know, it's not, it shouldn't be that. It should be, you know, if you look at the quality that they send, and the effort they put in, you know, it might not be your kind of music, but you know they're putting their best foot forward. So what the hell's going on? You know, that's, I don't subscribe to the fact that people are necessarily just not voting for us because they don't like us. I think it's just we're probably registering okay. You know, you only have to come 11th in every country for to get no votes.
I think it's safe to say that everybody listening to this, whether they're from the UK, whether they're from Ireland, wherever they're from, is just sitting there and they're going to go, preach. Like, yes.
Are you telling me I'm preaching now? I'm on my cell phone.
I'm telling you that everything you said hits the nail on the head, as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Definitely. Well, that's how I see it. Obviously, everybody has their own opinion on it, but that's my feeling on it, because I will not accept that the talent isn't there for it to sing, and I'm not accepting that people are trying to punish us every year. That's not happening either.
Niamh Kavanagh, thank you so much for joining us on the Eurotrip. It has been so wonderful. So thank you for joining us.
You're more than welcome. Thank you so very much.
This is the Eurotrip.
I said it there, I'll say it again. One of the nicest people I have had the pleasure of speaking to for this podcast, and so lovely to have Niamh Kavanagh on. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you want to hear more of Niamh, by the way, she has got her own podcast. Not that I want to push you away from this one, but she's got a podcast called Agony Rants. See what she's done there?
That's clever, isn't it? I like what she's done there. That's very good.
Isn't it? So she's done a few episodes of that so far. There's one every week. And the episode that came out just the other day is called Nervous Rex. So it's Niamh, her mate, who's a comedian as well. They've been friends for a really long time. And they're doing a show where, kind of, yeah, you can come on, you can rant about what you like. Think of Niamh as your fun agony aunt. She described Eurovision as being like a fun aunt earlier, or I did, and she agreed anyway. So just think of that encapsulated in a podcast. You'll probably enjoy it. It's called Agony Rants. So after you've listened to this, maybe go and check that out as well.
Yeah, definitely worth a listen. As was that chat. What a joy she is. She just sounds like so much fun, doesn't she? She's so natural, so down to earth, and just, you know, treats Eurovision the right way, because there are some artists who come and go and look back on it with a... There's a term I'm looking for here, and I can't quite find it. You know what I mean, though?
I do know what you mean. They're a little bit... I also can't.
Well, you know what we both mean anyway.
I know what you mean and you know what I mean, and hopefully the listeners know what we mean.
Yeah, let's hope so. But she looks back at it like you should. You know, she treats it a little bit of fun, but also loves it dearly as well. Oh, what a treat that was. Thanks so much, Rob, for bringing us that. What a treat.
That's all right. I want to play the bit about kind of how she says artists should kind of approach Eurovision and how she views Eurovision. I just want to play that to anyone that's like, Eurovision's rubbish and it's unpolitical. I just want to have that on my phone ready to go at any point when somebody says that, because yeah, I said preach at the time, and I think everybody listening to this would have listened to that and gone, yes, Niamh, we agree. Sadly, this week's podcast is almost at an end, James, but it does, however, mean it is time for yet another 1 second song.
Yes, it is. We're going to play the very first second of a Eurovision song, and all you've got to do is try and guess the artist performing, the name of the track, the year it was performed, and the country it was representing. It's as simple as that.
And as a little added extra now, we ensure that the song has a very tenuous link to the episode that you have just heard. And I am especially proud of the tenuous link that this week's 1 second song has to this podcast. James, are you ready? Listeners, I hope you're ready for the first listen of this week's 1 second song.
Now, you know, sometimes I'm not very confident and it's a bit tricky for me to try and figure out what on earth's going on.
That does happen more often than not, yeah.
However, this week, I'd like to say I am 100% confident straight off the bat.
Okay, well, let's have it again one more time, and then you can come at me straight with it. Just, you can give me the answer straight away. So here it is again. Oh. Go on then. What is it?
Well, I'm glad we played it again, because I was definitely going to give you the wrong song.
So when you said you were 100% confident, not so much.
Not so much, but here we are. Thanks for the second play. I'm definitely going to get it right. It is. We're going to wind the clocks back 6 years to 2015. and we're going to be hearing from Australia. That is Guy Sebastian with Tonight Again.
Damn right it is.
Oh, everyone's got their problems. There's always something on your mind. Oh, but tonight we ain't gotta solve them. For now, let's leave them all behind.
Four points for you. I think that's Full Houses. Is that a thing? Full Houses? Every time that we've done the 1 second song in the 2022 series for you.
Is it? Wow. So that means we don't have a chart or a tally, but I've definitely got more points than you this year.
I'm not sure it is, actually. No, I'm wrong, because you made an act up the other week, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, and you got one wrong last week. So maybe we're still level pegging.
Yeah, nonsense, everything I just said. But you got it this week, and that's the main thing. I tell you what you haven't got, though. You haven't got the tenuous link to this week's podcast, have you?
I can't think of much of a link, apart from in the news you mentioned that Australia have selected three acts for the national final, but I imagine it's a lot more in-depth than that.
Yeah, it's a bit too straightforward, that. No, you, of course, were talking to Luis earlier on.
Yep.
Now, Spain, of course, we love Spain in Eurovision, but they've not done that well recently, as we know, as you touched on. But I was fascinated to see that Spain's last nil point, or 0 points, overall, was all the way back in 1983, James. 1983.
Wow.
Tell you what else happened in 1983. The contest was held in Germany that year, by the way. Australia broadcast Eurovision for the very first time in 1983. And then, of course, all those years later, 2015, their very first entry on the Eurovision stage was Guy Sebastian, Tonight Again.
Very good. Very impressive knowledge there. I think we've all learnt a lot there. Thanks very much, Rob. Very good.
You're very welcome. You've got 4 points. Everybody's learnt something. Perfect place to end the podcast.
It is indeed. And we'll be back again next week, of course, won't we? And we've got another big guest, haven't we, next week?
We have. We cross from the Emerald Isle to Scandinavia, I understand, next week.
We do indeed. So, to find out first, shall we say, stick across our socials at Eurotrip Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. You're laughing at me, Rob. You're laughing. And hello at eurotrippodcast.com on the email. Why are you laughing?
I'm laughing at the phrase, stick across our social media. What does that mean?
Yeah, I realise I said that. I thought, you know what, confidence is key. I'm going to roll with it. And I could just see you laughing away in my eye line. Anyway, everybody, stick across those socials. I know you do it anyway. But it is time to wrap up this week's episode. Don't forget, we'll be back again in 7 days' time for a brand new podcast featuring a guest from Scandinavia. But in the meantime, don't forget to subscribe, leave us a review, and rate us 5 stars. From me, James, it's goodbye.
And from me, Rob, it's goodbye.
Did you see the that song that Daddy Frere released last week? Well, he didn't release it, but he put it on socials.
No.
Like, it was about a watermelon.
No.
First you take a piece of bread and another piece of bread, and you put them in a toaster, and he just makes a watermelon sandwich.
Oh, no.
Oh, honestly,
I don't like watermelon.
Do you not?
No.
Why?
It doesn't taste of anything.
But it's refreshing, isn't it? Oh, just imagine on the hot summer's day, resting on a balcony overlooking the Med, and somebody comes along and goes, Roberto, a piece of melone for you, sir.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.